It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President Trump has often been accused of having a thin skin, but he clearly got under the skin of Iran's President Hassan Rouhani with his scathing indictment of Iran's government yesterday and his threat to withdraw from the Obama-era Iran nuclear deal. President Trump would not say what he will do, but did say he has made a decision on whether to scrap the so-called JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal.
Well, I have to shut it.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
As a candidate, President Trump promised he would cancel the Iran deal, but his administration has recertified it twice and faces another 90-day renewal in October. In his speech to the United Nations General Assembly yesterday, the president ripped the agreement and seemed to suggest changes could be forthcoming.
Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it. Believe me.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani addressed the United Nations today, insisting Iran is living up to its side of the agreement, criticizing President Trump as a neophyte on foreign policy.
It will be a great pity if this agreement were to be destroyed by rogue newcomers to the world of politics. The world will have lost a great opportunity.
Rouhani also took the opportunity to respond to President Trump's harsh assessment of Iran as a corrupt dictatorship that exports bloodshed and chaos.
Ignorant, absurd, and hateful rhetoric filled with ridiculously baseless allegations.
Bulgaria's president, a fan of President Trump's election, but who is also close to Iran ally Russia, today urged the White House to stick with the deal.
My country reiterates its full support for joint, comprehensive plan of action.
Members of the president's administration, the Secretary of State and National Security Advisor among them, are also urging the president not to scrap the agreement. But an administration source tells Fox News that doesn't mean the president can't take other actions against Iran, such as tough new sanctions for its support of terrorism and other destabilizing activities.
So there you go. Good news and bad news. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. All right. So the good news. The good news is that the Iranians are upset. They're worried. And because they were called out. And of course, what President Trump said in his speech to the UN was absolutely accurate about what Tehran is doing to its own people. Do we not know about the Iranian Revolution? The only outbreak of the so-called Arab Spring. Of course, the Iranians are not Arabs, but let's just say the spring in the Middle East, where President Obama would not help those that wanted to be free, would not help in the uprising. He helped, you know, Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood. He helped his Islamist friends. He did not help those people in Iran who wanted to be free. Okay, so Iran's upset about being called out. Now, the bad news. President Trump gave a great speech. If you haven't heard it, it's on our Facebook page. He gave a great speech in which he called out Iran, and he called out this embarrassing, he called it, and he's right, Iran nuclear agreement. We're supposed to be stopping them from developing nuclear weapons when the opposite is really true. So the bad news is, so we have Tillerson, we have Kelly, we have McMaster, who, now, you know what, you can't pull out of that deal because, well, you just, you know, it would make our European allies mad. You just can't do that. So you heard what John Roberts said. They are encouraging President Trump to stay in the Iran deal. So here we have the same problem all over again. But now, some encouraging news since we last spoke yesterday morning, late breaking news that France's President Macron says that the Iran nuclear deal is no longer enough to safeguard against growing power of Tehran in the Middle East. So, you know, the French have been steadfastly, thrilled about this deal, and so has Germany, and so has all the other European countries, because they're making money. And they don't want to have sanctions against Iran because they do business with Iran. But now Macron is saying that the Iran nuclear deal is no longer enough to safeguard against the growing power of Tehran. So that sounds to me like a crack in the European armor, but we'll see. And of course, what you have to know is that there is sort of a cooperative effort between, remember President Bush used to call it the axis of evil, this development of nuclear weapons to try to undermine and destroy, or at least threaten, the United States. Kim Jong-un is the focus of that right now, but trust me, he's not working alone. Let's listen to this report by Greg Palcott.
As U.S. troops continue their exercises in South Korea, the region and the world are reeling from President Trump's comments at the U.N. General Assembly Tuesday that the U.S. would totally destroy North Korea if it was forced to defend itself or its allies from Kim Jong-un's nuclear weapons and missiles. U.S. allies nearby were positive. South Korea said it was a sign of America's strong resolve.
I highly appreciated the position that all options are on the table, expressed by President Trump.
Kim Jong-un's other neighbors were not so pleased.
All Security Council resolutions call on all parties to stay committed to peacefully resolving the Korean Peninsula issue through a political and diplomatic approach.
We don't doubt that the United States has capacity to do something very destructive. But I paid attention to another part of the president's speech when he said that he respects sovereignty and equality in international relations.
As his service members would be called on for any action against North Korea, the defense secretary weighed in.
We continue to press on the diplomatic level, and that includes economic sanctions, of course. But at this time, we must also recognize the somber reality that military options must be available in order to protect our allies and ourselves.
While some here think North Korea will be kept in line by the president's talk, others think it will reject it or just be confused.
Both Koreans may believe Mr. Trump is totally unpredictable. He's not ready to go war or use force.
You think they think he could be bluffing?
How could he be bluffing?
Caught in the middle, the region's residents.
Probably he has a good idea, I think.
You think he has a good idea?
No.
Why?
Because that will destroy everybody here in Seoul and everywhere in Korea, probably.
It's really a tough situation, I have to tell you. I was in on a briefing yesterday about what's going on in North Korea and about China's involvement, and it was actually pretty frightening. It looks as though China has been actually supplying North Korea with technology. That North Korea has kind of mimicked. There is substantial evidence that they've mimicked the technology that China has on these nuclear warheads. There's also the suspicion that Pakistan is working with them, that they may be sort of a proxy in terms of experimenting with various nuclear warheads, and that China is, according to sources, the way we're hearing this is like China just is helpless. Kim Jong-un is crazy. He's in the region, and poor China, they've done what they can. You've heard the president kind of say that. And they're trying, but, you know, they just can't control this guy. When the truth is, what I'm hearing is that the Chinese military is all over this, that they are happy to have North Korea be the rogue regime because they are happy. The point is they want to dominate. They want to control. And they've been moving toward this for a long time. They've stolen our technology. They did that. They started under the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration handed them so much of our technology. It was amazing. The corruption that we have lived through in the last 20 years is incomprehensible. And so you might remember that when North Korea started rattling its saber 10, 12 years ago under the Bush administration, the Chinese solution was this three-party talks. Remember the three-party talks? Well, sources tell me that the three-party talks were all about buying time for China so that they could develop their nuclear weapons and so that they could get further along so that they could be militarily superior to us, which I can't say that they are. I don't know, the jury's out on that, but I would tell you this. America's weaponry, our ability, our capabilities have been so diminished. It is frightening, absolutely frightening. Barack Obama even stopped the program developing the weapons that would be able to counter Kim Jong-un's aggressive attacks against the missiles that he's been testing, that he wants to put a nuclear warhead on, the kinds of weapons that we have defensive. To fight that, we're in development. And Barack Obama, the president, stopped that research, stopped that program. So we are so far behind in developing and equipping our own military to protect us. These are the untold stories, which I think you have a right to know. All right, so I have to come back home, because coming back home, we know that the Congress is trying to do something else. It's called the Graham-Cassidy bill. I'm not going to play the clip. I'm just going to tell you that this is the last chance to pass some sort of a lesser form of Obamacare before September 30th, which means then the 60-vote rule kicks back in, because Mitch McConnell won't let it stop. And that means that they'd have to have Democratic votes in order to even pull back on Obamacare. So they're trying to get something done. The Cassidy-Graham bill is now top of the heap. I have to tell you that people that I trust are split down the middle on this. And so I can't definitively tell you how I feel about it. I would say this at this point. We'll do a longer show on this when we have time. We have something else today we want to talk about. But the Graham-Cassidy bill, no question, make sure that the subsidies to big insurance companies remain, because that's what K Street, Mitch McConnell, and the leadership is all about. It's because, you know, they're the big supporters of, it's a one happy family. You know, we give you money, you give us money. So we give you tax dollars, you give us money for our campaigns. That's how it goes down. So the insurance companies would be in gravy if this passes. Rand Paul is standing against it. Politico ran this piece against him, talking about leadership is, he's persona non grata. Republicans are very upset with him because he won't go along with it. But of course, he doesn't care. He says it's Obamacare light. I can't find the sentence that he said. He says a lot of things about it, but he is concerned about its redistribution of money from some states to another. Others are saying that this is at least a lesser problem than full-blown Obamacare. It will back it off a little bit. It will do away with the mandates so that you don't have to be part of Obamacare. But then what does that mean exactly? I'm not sure. So stay tuned. We'll have more of a discussion on that. I guess Rand Paul's a doctor, and if he feels it's not good, I kind of tend to trust him. But others are saying, look, if the Republicans don't pass something, they will be in trouble in the 2018 ballot. So I don't know how I feel about that either, because maybe they deserve to be in trouble. Leadership does. So we'll talk about that at when we can expand it better. I want to tell you something that came out about the Alabama Senate race, because that race between Luther Strange and Judge Moore is taking place this coming Tuesday. There's an article by Dr. Susan Berry, who's been on our show several times, sort of revealing the fact that Luther Strange is very much a supporter of Common Core. You know, Mike Pence is going down, and so is the president, to support Luther Strange. They're going to be holding a rally, I think, Friday night in support of Luther Strange. And of course, Mike Pence has been really bad on Common Core, which just makes me sick, honestly, to say that to you. Betsy DeVos is Miss Common Core, even though she was not honest about that when she was being nominated for Secretary of Education. And so now we know that Betsy DeVos's family, at least six different members of her family, are donating significant amounts to Luther Strange. Wonder why? And we know that Justice Roy Moore is a strong opponent of Common Core. So that's what Susan Berry writes in her article in Breitbart. By the way, we'll put that article on our Facebook page so that you can read it. But coming up next, what I want to talk about today is this whole business of the raid on Paul Manafort's home, the whole business of wiretapping the Trump Tower or not, and what that's all about, because I think this is very dangerous. I've asked my husband to join us, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Get hope.
Last month, I came across Psalms 23 in the Bible.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
I was impressed with, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." It occurred to me that since Jesus is my shepherd, provider, and protector, I should not want. God is committed to the needs in our lives, not necessarily wants. Debt is taking future resources, emotionally, physically, financially, or spiritual resources, to satisfy current wants, creating a gap or a deficit, and thus creating a debt. Since Jesus is my shepherd, the one who provides and protects me, I have the ability not to be enslaved by my wants. Now that gives hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
It's time for The Legal Edge, a look at your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. And now, with a look at what's happening on the legal front, the president of the Pacific Justice Institute, Brad Dacus.
As a parent, student, teacher, or school board member of faith, knowing the ins and outs of evangelizing in a public school can be helpful, but can also seem daunting. Well, we as Christians are called to share the gospel and be a voice of truth and light in our communities. Well, this fall, you can be at school feeling confident in your rights and comfortable in your beliefs with our free book, Reclaim Your School. This digital book is an excellent resource full of tips on how to safely and effectively share your faith in the public school system. Find out more and download your free copy at pji.org. I'm Brad Dacus.
To find out more about The Legal Edge, call 916-857-6900 or log on at pacificjustice.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Parents are accusing a North Carolina high school of indoctrinating their kids with anti-Trump rhetoric. They say a French teacher at Franklin Academy High School put up a white supremacy pyramid poster in her classroom. The pyramid helps students determine if they are an overt or covert white supremacist. For example, if you celebrate Columbus Day or eat a taco on Cinco de Mayo or don't believe in white privilege, that makes you a white supremacist. Parents reached out to the American Lens website after their complaints were ignored by school administrators. I reached out to school leadership. They declined to comment. The pyramid also mentions the phrase "Make America Great Again" as a sign of white supremacy, which could explain why the teacher threatened to send any student who uttered the phrase to the office. Could someone please explain to me what any of this has to do with teaching kids how to speak French? S'il vous plaît? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets. And we have looked carefully inside the FBI. Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
Okay, so that was FBI Director, former FBI Director James Comey. There's no such thing as the wiretapping of the Trump Towers. That's just total fabrication. He didn't say that, but I'm adding that. That's the inference. And you heard how the press went wild, how CNN went wild, and all the other media outlets. The president's crazy. He's crazy. How could he say that he's being wiretapped in Trump Tower? And, of course, then James Clapper, former head of Defense Intelligence Agency, weighs in saying this.
There was no wiretap against Trump Tower during the campaign conducted by any part of the national intelligence community.
And in terms of the Russian intrusion into the election, you stand by all that you've said about
it? Absolutely.
I said, that's James Clapper. No, no, no. No such thing. The president's crazy. We heard that a lot. But then this week, things changed. James Rosen did a full report. Let's listen.
It was the mother of all tweets when President Trump declared early on March 4th, "Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory." Within days, former and current officials appeared to refute the claim.
There was no such wiretap activity mounted against the president-elect at the time, or as a candidate, or against his campaign.
I have no information that supports those tweets. That the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components.
Many in the news media pronounce the president mistaken or worse.
It's just a falsity, and we just need to call it that.
It's an administration that has lost all credibility at this point.
The president promised additional disclosure.
I think you're going to find some very interesting items coming to the forefront over the next 2 weeks.
In fact, several months would pass before Obama-era National Security Advisor Susan Rice confirmed to House investigators that she unmasked the names of Trump campaign associates from classified intercept data in which those names had appeared in coded form, a form of surveillance in which the investigators believe other Obama aides participated.
The CNN exclusive breaking at this moment.
Now CNN reports Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort was under federal wiretap from sometime in 2016 into early this year, a period when, as CNN states, Manafort was known to talk to President Trump. The Justice Department isn't commenting, but in litigation against the government watchdog group American Oversight, DOJ recently reaffirmed it has no records to support the Trump tweets, but DOJ also said it can neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of records relating to wiretaps of campaign associates.
So if, in fact, Mr. Trump was in touch with Mr. Manafort, who was under a FISA investigation, and he could have been picked up, but that is a far cry from Mr. Trump's own tweets saying that President Obama was tapping his phones.
The president has argued his tweet shouldn't be so narrowly construed.
Because wiretapping is pretty old-fashioned stuff, but that really covers surveillance and many other things.
So it's now possible that the president, while he was not the target of a wiretap by his predecessor, was wiretapped by the Obama administration through telephonic surveillance of his associate, which, if true, would place Mr. Trump closer to a measure of vindication than he was, say, last week.
Okay, so that was James Rosen on Fox News. Now, this is a very serious situation, and I that's why I want to spend some time on it this morning. Paul Manafort was working for the Trump administration, he was working for the Trump campaign way back. You remember that he was let go before Trump actually, I believe, became the nominee, at least shortly thereafter. But we know now that he was wiretapped twice, not only during the campaign, but also after President Trump was elected. We also know that he was in contact with President Trump. So there's reason to believe that President Trump was also picked up on those wiretaps. Now, Paul Manafort is demanding today, as of yesterday, he's demanding that the Justice Department release the transcripts. He wants to make it public. And also, Paul Manafort's house in Alexandria was raided by the FBI in an early morning search. I want to talk about all of this because Paul Manafort, we don't know if he's guilty of something. The idea initially was that it was foreign surveillance. So it's supposed to be like perhaps he's like a spy or he colluded with the Russians. But now it's morphing into the past 10 years of his financial dealings. And so Robert Mueller, the investigator, is hot on his heels. And it would seem that even CNN and even an article I read in the Washington Post this morning feel that maybe this is kind of aggressive. It's also dangerous. So I've asked my husband to join us this morning. If for those of you who haven't heard my husband, Bruce, speak, he was a former FBI agent, served for about almost 25 years with the FBI. Before that, he was a Cook County state's attorney. And when I met Bruce in Washington, D.C., he was working as an attorney right after 9/11. And it was his job to go into this very secret court called the FISA court and present warrants for various surveillance tools. This is that very secret court we talk about. So Bruce was in that court almost every day, at least several times a week. And besides the fact that he was also an FBI agent who understands the rules of engagement and what should be done in terms of raids and that sort of thing, I've asked him to join us this morning. So Bruce, before we first of all, good morning. Good morning, dear.
Good morning.
You know, before we get into the details of Manafort, could you please just tell us about that secretive court, what you can say about it?
Well, the FISA court had a very specific purpose, and really the purpose of the court was to issue warrants against people being accused of engaging or believed to be engaging in either international terrorism or espionage or sabotage. That's the purpose of it. It's to, I would not have said these things years ago because they were secretive, but now it's so much has been divulged about what goes on in our intelligence services. The U.S. government, to protect itself, obviously monitors the communications of many foreign countries. I don't think that's any secret anymore. And in the United States are often embassies, consulates that are run by, that are owned and operated by foreign powers, many of which are not friends of the United States. And we want to know what's going on in those embassies and the communications that are going through. So really, the FISA court was set up to make sure that there's no abuses of either the what we're doing with foreign powers, but especially it was set up to protect United States citizens that might be having dealings with these consulates. Because obviously, the consulates are there, the embassies are there, so that American government officials can have interactions and deal with people. It's not all illegal. It's not illegal just to go and have a, you know, have a meeting with people in a consulate or people in an embassy. Where it becomes a problem is if a United States citizen is cooperating with a foreign power that's hostile and giving them information that's hostile to the United States, could be damaging to our government. It's not just having dealings. And Paul Manafort, to my understanding, has been a lobbyist for years. He's been an advisor. He's worked under the campaigns or the administrations of Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, the first Bush, and Bob Dole. I mean, these are the kind of people he's represented when he's had conversations with people from foreign powers. I don't think on its face there's anything wrong with that.
Okay, so just to be clear then, Bruce, Manafort was doing a lot of work with Ukraine, and I think that's the object of the alleged connection. Now, the Ukrainian president at the time, leader that he was working with, the Ukrainian leaders who were in concert with the current president, was a supporter of Putin. And so that's how they're making this connection. So based on your description, if Manafort was guilty of colluding with Russians, the FISA court would not be out of line, assuming there was a good reason to believe that he had done something illegal. The FISA court would not be an inappropriate venue for them to issue a warrant for surveillance for him.
Well, that's putting it broadly. There is a high standard at the FISA court in regards to issuing a warrant. It can't just be a suspicion that somebody might be talking to a foreign power. In order to pick up the conversations of a United States citizen, there has to be a showing that he is being directed by or employed by a foreign power. Now, just talking to a foreign power does not mean you're being directed by them. And by directed, what we mean is to go against the interests of the United States, to be a spy, talking to people about business deals, that's not being a spy. Being a spy is divulging classified information, things of that nature, to a foreign power that could harm the United States. Now, so far, nothing I've heard about Paul Manafort shows he divulged any kind of information like that. And if Paul Manafort was being targeted in a FISA investigation, and there has not been a showing that he was doing something of a spying nature, then none of the information gathered by a FISA warrant is to be divulged, or his identity. That's the purpose of FISA One of the big purposes is to protect United States citizens from being spied on by our government.
You know, Bruce, I was reading that if you divulge, the FISA court is so secret that if you divulge the fact that there's any kind of a warrant, it's a felony. It can carry up to 10 years of imprisonment. So how do we know that Paul Manafort was targeted by a FISA warrant? How do we know that?
Well, that's the big question. I think there's two big questions here. One is Paul Manafort being used as a ruse to get at President Trump? That's my suspicion, is that the Obama Justice Department was dying to know what was going on with President Trump's campaign. And you cannot use a FISA warrant unless someone is deemed to be an agent of a foreign power. Again, a spy. Now, obviously, President Trump wasn't a spy, so they needed somebody that they could designate as an agent of foreign power that they knew would be talking to President Trump, President-elect Trump, candidate Trump at the time, whatever his status was, whenever the conversations were being held. So isn't it convenient that they know Paul Manafort is a close advisor of Donald Trump? So they say, gee, let's designate Paul Manafort as an agent of a foreign power. And how did they do that? Many people assume it was done off this dossier that was ginned up, has been totally debunked, that was supposedly showing Russian collusion with Donald Trump's campaign. And so to get a FISA, that's what would have had to been shown, is that Paul Manafort was, in fact, an agent of a foreign power.
You know, back to that dossier, Ed Henry on Fox was reporting, Bruce, that even the judges in the FISA court now are, whoever they are, were embarrassed and angry, allegedly. These are sources of Ed Henry's, that they were presented with this dossier, and that's the allegation, and also that the dossier might have very likely been paid for by the FBI. And this dossier, as I've discussed it ad nauseum at this microphone, is a completely salacious, ridiculous. It reads like a dumb Danielle Steele novel. It is so, it's really unbelievable because it's so, it just makes some claims that are outrageous. It's been disproven. And I think my understanding is that when it was circulated, even the heads of the various intelligence agencies knew it could not possibly be true. So it looks like the FBI was complicit in paying for this dossier, and then turns around and uses this dossier in order to get a surveillance, a wiretap of Manafort and also Carter Page. It's really, Bruce, this is embarrassing for you, I know, as an FBI agent. I guess we're both praying this might not be true, but it really looks bad for the FBI, doesn't it?
I think it does. There's a concept in law called the fruit of the poisonous tree. And in other words, if the original premise is false, anything that is gotten as a result of that premise is no longer admissible as evidence. I think in this case, when you start with that dossier, the dossier was used to make a designation of Paul Manafort as an agent of a foreign power. Therefore, the government could overhear his conversations, therefore overhear conversations with Donald Trump. Now, if you follow that through, nothing should have been kept or been admissible following that determination that that dossier was false. Nothing that flows from that should be admissible.
You know, when we would come back, Bruce, you heard James Clapper deny there was any wiretapping. You heard James Comey deny it before a congressional committee. And then there's also a question about President Obama. So I would like to know who you think would have known about such a wiretap that would involve a sitting president of an opposition party, and before that, a candidate of the opposition party. And also, I have some clips that I want to play for you and get your response. Paul Manafort's home was raided early in the morning by the FBI, and I want to know what you think about how that came down also. This is Sandy Rios. My husband Bruce is with me. We'll be right back after this.
Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get understanding. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Flippy, the burger flipping robot, has completed its first shift at a California fast food restaurant, replacing humans at the grill. It grills burgers to perfection every time, and even places them on the buns when they're cooked. Much like self-driving vehicles, Flippy continuously learns from its experiences over time. Whose jobs do you think Flippy puts at risk? The fast food restaurant owners, the managers, or the minimum wage workers? Minimum wage hikes hurt low-wage workers more than anyone. No wonder this robot is rolling out in California. Ground zero in the fight for 15.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Life, Love, and Family, featuring the American Association of Christian Counselors President, Dr. Tim Clinton. Each weekday evening, you'll hear Dr. Clinton and his expert guests address important and sometimes difficult issues of our day that impact your life, your love, and your family, using the scriptures as their text. Access to archive programs is available at lifeloveandfamily.net. Life, Love, and Family, 11 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
A war rages for our attention. Texting, Snapchats, ads, and tweets. We are constantly connected, but always isolated. The world is at our fingertips, but we feel lost. Think of what could happen if we lay aside every distraction and center our attention on prayer. Think of the possibilities if we resist all diversions to focus on the author of life. The time has come to fix our eyes. See you at the poll Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. This is your time to focus. This is your chance to connect. This is your opportunity to join the movement. See you at the poll. It's not about position or politics. It's about prayer. See you at the poll Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. See you at the poll.
Head to SYATP.com for details.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump announced yesterday that he has decided what he's going to do about the Obama bomb deal with Iran, since he told the UN it's an embarrassment negotiated with the murderous Iranian regime. Presumably, he won't perpetuate it. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is reportedly determined yet again to undermine and countermand the president's policy. He's getting a lot of lobbying help from Boeing, which is prominent among the companies and governments expecting to garner billions of dollars doing business with and thereby propping up the mullahs. Mr. Trump knows that the Iranians are not complying with their obligation, are becoming an ever greater threat, and are only emboldened by a presidency in disarray. John Bolton has given him an alternative. Terminate the Obama bomb charade and really protect America. Let us pray. That's what the president has decided to do. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets, and we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
FBI Director James Comey, before he was asked to before he was fired, actually testifying before Congress and probably under oath about the president of the United States, Donald Trump, claiming that Trump Tower was wiretapped. And so you heard what he said. My husband is my guest this morning. Bruce is was an FBI agent, a career FBI agent, before that a prosecutor at Cook County in Chicago, his task right after 9/11 was to go into the FISA court and present warrants for surveillance. So this is a subject about which he is expert. So, Bruce, you heard what James Comey said in testimony before Congress. Was he lying, do you think?
I think he was lying by omission, because if you look at the original tweet of then President-elect Trump, he said, Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just prior to my election. Now, the setting that then Director Comey was speaking in was not a criminal trial. It was a congressional oversight hearing. That's where it's basically he's before his bosses. He's before the Congress that oversees the FBI, and they want to know what's going on with this investigation. And if you listen to the parsing of words by then Director Comey, I find it amazing. He says, I have no information that supports those tweets. That's not an answer. The answer should have been, we've reviewed our files. We had a FISA warrant on Paul Manafort in which the president may have been picked up on. Now, that should not have been divulged in the public hearing. But when you watch these hearings, you always see them say, I can't answer that now. That needs to be done in a private setting. Well, believe me, when Comey was asked that question about whether there was a wiretap, his response should have been, can we go to closed session? And then he should have been readily straightforward with the information that, yes, there was a tap on Manafort, and the president was picked up on that. The purpose of these hearings is transparency, not to parse words. And when you watched all these people, Clapper, Comey, they all parsed their words when they got up there. And that might be okay in a criminal trial where you only answer the question as it's posed. But in an oversight hearing, you tell them what's going on to the fullest extent of your knowledge.
And Bruce, when you get a FISA warrant, whenever you would present a warrant at the court, the FBI director had to sign off on each. No underling, no assistant. It was always the FBI director who had to sign off. So there's no way he would not know about this, right?
That is absolutely correct. You would not believe the oversight that goes into these warrants. Not only does the director of the FBI or whatever agency that's pursuing, because not just the FBI goes for these warrants, the CIA does, the NSA, but whomever the director of that particular agency is must personally sign and review that application for the warrant. And I mean, they look them over, because what they are doing is they are certifying to the court that everything in that warrant, and they're long, they might be 50 pages of evidence that we're presenting, that everything to the best of their knowledge that's included in that application is the truth. And there's a step further that it goes. Not only does the director of the FBI have to sign off on it, then you have to have the Attorney General of the United States sign off on that. And I'll tell you, those people do not put their name on just anything. They don't just certify anything, because the risk of embarrassment or worse, being accused of committing perjury in those applications is paramount on their mind when they're signing these. You know, they would rather we not go after a warrant if we're not sure of the information than take a chance that we get the warrant and then later we find out, just like we were talking about that concept of fruit of the poisonous tree, that some of the evidence we presented was not in fact accurate or true.
All right, so the FBI director would have known, and the Attorney General, who would have been Eric Holder at the time. Now, how about President Barack Obama, Loretta Lynch? How about Barack Obama, Bruce? Look, this is a wiretap of a candidate of the opposing party, the lead candidate. And it's a at least of his building and of his political people working with his campaign. And this is the allegation is, of course, that this candidate may have colluded with the Russians. That's the excuse upon which they base this. And then you've got this man is elected president, and you have a continued surveillance. So would President Barack Obama have known about this?
There is no doubt in my mind that he would know about it. If he didn't, then his attorney general was hiding things from him. The attorney generals regularly confer with the president about what they're doing. You think they're not going to have a conversation about a wiretap that might be picking up conversations of Donald Trump? That goes beyond comprehension. You've heard then President Obama talking about this situation. Now, you think he's going to go out and talk about this situation if he doesn't know what's going on there? I think if you want to start, call me a conspiracy theorist. I'll take that hit any time. If you don't think that James Comey, Loretta Lynch, and Barack Obama were all aware of those wiretaps, I think you're either a partisan that is totally against Donald Trump, or you're living in a fantasy world.
Paul, Paul Manafort is what I was going to talk about. Bruce, CNN was the one that broke the story on now we know that Paul Manafort, who had a place at Trump Tower, I guess we should have said that. That's why we know it's Trump Tower was wiretapped. Just a few weeks ago, CNN broke this also, that, in fact, this is their wording. Bob Mueller, the investigator in chief here, ordered this raid of Manafort's home. And here's what CNN says. The search, an unusually hard-nosed tactic in a probe that centers on possible tax and financial crimes, going back 10 years, by the way, which has nothing to do with FISA court, began before dawn as Manafort and his wife lay in bed. FBI agents entered with guns drawn and insisted on searching Kathleen Manafort for weapons, a standard part of FBI searches, but a jarring event for the Manaforts. I just want to know what you think about their early morning raid. Is that normal for the FBI to conduct?
Some of that sounds very outrageous. Now, of course, the safety of the agents is always paramount. But let's be real here. First off, the agents picked the lock of the residence. I've never seen that done before on a private citizen. That technique might be used in an embassy, something of that, to break in. And again, I wouldn't say that other than that's public knowledge now, so it's not a big deal. But on a private United States citizen, again, you have to remember, these investigations are not to target United States citizens. And even if Paul Manafort has been somehow shoehorned into being called an agent of a foreign power, his wife is not a foreign power agent. And, you know, my understanding is that they took pictures of Manafort's suits, things like that. You know, again, you have to remember the purpose of FISA is to see if someone is an international terrorist or committing sabotage or espionage. This whole thing seems like because a criminal warrant couldn't be gotten on this, they used the FISA court to get at Manafort. I think, again, that's where the problem is the FISA court, in my opinion, was completely misused, knowingly misused, by the Justice Department to get at Manafort because they knew Manafort would be in communication with Trump and they wanted to know what was going on in the Trump campaign. I don't think this has anything to do with international espionage, sabotage, or terrorism.
You know, I was just reading that they have actually, the Mueller team has informed Manafort that an indictment is imminent. They are just ratcheting up the pressure on him. And I read what I had heard you say, Bruce, that you think they're trying to flip Manafort and trying to get him to testify against Donald Trump. That's in writing now. So how concerned Should people listening to us talk this morning be about this? They're not Paul Manafort. They're not public figures, most of them. How concerned should we be about this? What is the implication of all of this?
I think we should be very concerned that the powers of the federal government, I think, were turned on a person in order to get at Donald Trump. If you recall, when the Patriot Act was passed right after 9/11, the left went crazy saying that that act was being abused to get the records of people that had no, you know, were suspected of maybe having ties to terrorism organizations or terrorist organizations, but that was it. And they said that's not enough. Now, I have yet to hear how Paul Manafort is tied to a terrorist organization or is acting on behalf of a foreign power to commit any kind of crime against the United States. If Mueller indicts Manafort on a tax charge, how does that have anything to do with international terrorism or espionage? They've used the FISA court, in my opinion, to get around that they couldn't make a criminal investigation to get a wiretap or investigative techniques like that. So they used FISA, and they came up with this story that because Manafort was acting on behalf of doing work on behalf of Ukraine, he's an agent of a foreign power. Do you know how many people in Washington, D.C., especially former congressmen, former senators, act on behalf of lobbying for a foreign power, many of which are not exactly friends of the United States? We'd have to lock up person after person or have FISA warrants on person after person. This is an abuse of the FISA system, in my opinion.
You know, that reminds me of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, because, you know, he was working as a sort of a, he was working in conjunction with the Turkish government and doing work with them, I don't know, consulting, whatever he was doing. And then remember also, Bruce, that General Flynn was wiretapped. Remember they released transcripts of his conversation? It was based on this conversation with some Russian that he was accused of colluding and then of also not telling Vice President Pence the full story about something. It's really such a thin grail. It's really thin. And so as a result, you know, General Flynn has now legal bills of seven figures. And they're trying to bankrupt and ruin him, and they really have pretty much, I think, he doesn't come from money, unlike some of these. Like Paul Manafort probably has a lot of money. Not that that's good. Not that I think he deserves any of this anymore. I'm just saying he could absorb it better than someone like a regular guy like Lieutenant General Flynn. By the way, that reminds me, his family is raising money for his defense, and I'm telling, we have donated, Bruce and I have donated, because I think this is disgraceful. They are ruining people's lives, and the whole world has turned upside down. By the way, we'll put that address for General Flynn on our Facebook page so that you can, if you see fit, if you feel like you want to help, then you can do that. Bruce, thank you so much for your service to our country. And for, you know, this is a big risk actually for you to speak out the way you are this morning. So I appreciate your honesty. I think that people will appreciate your integrity as a man who loves this country and has served it faithfully for most of your adult life. Thank you so much.
Yes, I have. It does me no joy to go against, say things against my former agency, because I love many of the people there and they're doing a great job. But the whole thing of the FBI is integrity. We must maintain our integrity.
All right, so that's the way it is on Thursday. Tomorrow morning, we'll have a full-blown discussion on the SPLC and hate crimes, and you don't want to miss that either. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.